door for a night, but joy comes in the morning light. I can't see it coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song right. Well, hello everybody. Thank you for joining me. This is Miss Cece, the real infopreneur. I hope you all are faring well. Of course, this is a podcast, but we will go ahead and say it. We know that everybody's mind is just infiltrated right now with this coronavirus issue. But I'm not going to focus on that tonight, but I hope you are all just faring well and that you are building up your immune systems. You are taking plenty of liquids. You are getting plenty of rest. Today has been daylight savings time, so we've, I guess, technically lost 1 hour. So I would suggest that you take one extra hour to prepare yourself for bed so that you can get the sleep that you need. So that again, you can continue preparing your bodies for whatever sickness that may come. Again, I'm not going to talk about that virus so much tonight. I'm pretty sure you are infiltrated by news and social media and all that. But I will tell you, like I said, take care of yourself. Get your immune system together. Stop eating the sugars and the meats and all those different things that do not help. Meanwhile, tonight, it is night. It's night where I am. We will be talking to Miss Ashley Evans. Now, Ashley is a very, very interesting young lady. I met her a while back, and I'm going to just go ahead and read her bio to you. And it says, intentionally or otherwise, we will all leave a legacy. My legacy will be eradicating maternal mortality when I am part of the past. So should the maternal morbidity crisis. A second generation service member, Ashley Evans was born to Navy Nurse Corps and Marine Corps aviation officers in Okinawa, Japan. She earned her BS in biomedical engineering from George Washington University in 2013, commissioning as a service warfare officer via ROTC. Her tours include the Combat System Electronics Division officer on board USS Shoup, DDG 86 out of Everett, Washington, and the Electronics Material Officer of commissioning crew on board USS Billings LCS 15 in Mayport, Florida. Ashley began her career in midwifery as a volunteer birth assistant to a home birth midwife in 2017. Over the course of 2 years, she would attend more than 20 births as a doula and birth assistant, developing an interest in home birth roles in American birth culture. Her passion for birth culture blossomed into addressing racial disparities in maternal morbidity rates and birth justice, and she began raising funds for better access to home births for minority women in 2019. She has since raised over $4,000 to cover home birth expenses. In January 2019, Ashley was accepted into Yale School of Nursing graduate entry into nursing midwifery program. After deferring for a year due to operational commitments while active duty, she used her gap year to travel to 11 countries, including Tanzania, Zimbabwe, and Namibia. Her story has been featured in Women Who Serve magazine, Travel Noir, Paper Bow, and the What's Up Next podcast. So we look forward to bringing Ashley on. She's also going to talk to us about real estate. And let's see, the website she's building, home she's purchased, and basically being an all-around entrepreneur and service member.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
This call is being recorded.
All right, everybody. So we're back. Thank you so much for coming and spending time with us. This is Miss Cece, the real infopreneur. And as promised, I have Miss Ashley Evans here with us today. And her website is called ashleyevans.com. And I have to let you know that Ashley is spelled A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H, Ashley Evans, EVANS.com. So you don't spell Ashley some other way. So, all right. So right now, Ashley, why don't you introduce yourself to us right now? I did a brief introduction with your bio, but just tell us what you want us to know about you, and then we'll get into some more questions.
Okay, so what I don't want people to know about me. My name is Ashley. I am 28 years old. I just separated from active duty naval service last August of 2019. I was a ship driver, also known as a surface warfare officer, or SWO, for 6 years. And then I separated, and I traveled to 12 different countries, seven countries in Africa, and 5 countries in Europe. And I just returned from Italy last week, and I will be moving to Connecticut to start getting ready to start Yale School of Nursing. I've been a doula for about maybe 3 years now. I fell in love with the birth community. I am hyper passionate about the maternal morbidity disparities that Black women face, and I am going to Yale in order to start, you know, my journey in doing what I can to change that maternal morbidity rate. So I think that's it. I think that's me. Oh, and I like real estate. So travel, real estate, personal finances, military, doula, birth. That's like me in a nutshell. I think that's
cool. Yeah, well, we appreciate you making it sound so simple, but it's really not, because again, like I told you before, I've been following you on Facebook and I'm just like, wow. Look at what she is doing now. I mean, first of all, we just all, I'm pretty sure, want to thank you for your service to the country that you have given to us. You know, that is so important. And, you know, we can't thank our service members enough, because you put your life on the line for us every day, and you didn't have to do that, and you did. So we definitely, we appreciate that so much. And so next, let's talk about the point where I met you. I met you when you wanted to start investing in real estate. So I have here that you have purchased not house, but houses. Tell us about that.
Oh my goodness. So it was two houses. So the story behind meeting CC. I met CC after taking a course from a man who is big in tax liens, David Anderson from Atlanta, Georgia. I took one of those tax lien courses, and the story is kind of wild. I'm going to take some time on the story, because different time, different girl. I can definitely say I have grown since this moment, but basically what happened is I was brand new to the Navy. I think I had been active duty for like a year. I had just graduated college, and I couldn't find my footing as like an adult, or I couldn't find my voice. I needed something where it was my own and I could take charge of it. And I was having a hard time doing that in the military. In other words, like I didn't take orders very well. And I needed something where I could feel like I could be my own person, because, you know, the military is the military and it's not exactly designed for individuality. Mm-hmm. So I went up to David and Cece. And I was like, hey, I want to be a millionaire. And he was like, cool, bet, take this course. That's where I met Cece. I take this course. And then he's like, David is like, all right, check this out. I'm like 22, 23 at the time. He's like, clear out your bank account and meet me in Georgia. And I'm like, okay, that's a great idea. Like, literally known this man for like a week and a half, 2 weeks at most. Met him like at church at random. Get to Atlanta with like literally all the money that I have. It's like $5,000. And he sends me this address. He's not there. And I show up and it's the courthouse steps. I have no idea what's going on. Like, this was my first tax lien. Like, I had no idea what was going on. So I like have this envelope with like literally $5,000 in it, and I'm sitting at the courthouse steps, like Fulton County, and the auction starts, And I had written down addresses, not parcel numbers. And, you know, when they do the auction is in parcel numbers.
Well, I had hold on. So slow down. We know that you're,
we know that you've done this
and all that. But for the people listening and may that may not know about tax liens or even real estate for that matter, what is a parcel number versus the address? What is the parcel number?
Yeah, so I'll take it back a step further. So tax liens are basically a way for any city or county or what have you to collect money back taxes. So what they'll do is they'll say, hey, this house owes us $5,000 in taxes. So does anybody want to pay it? And then if the person who pays back the city either can have the owner of the house pay them back plus a certain interest rate that depends on the county, or if, you know, the owner of the house like doesn't pay it back, then they can get the property outright. So my house that I ended up buying, the owner had died and didn't have any next of kin, and that's why he didn't pay the taxes, because there was no one to pay the taxes. So if you're careful about it, you know, don't take people's houses, don't, you know, kick families out. That's predatory. I don't support. If you're careful and you do your work, it's definitely lucrative, and it's a good way to put families back in vacant homes. You know, homes in older neighborhoods where people don't have next of kin and people are dying and things like that. So when you go to this tax lien sale, the government doesn't use addresses. It uses parcel numbers. It uses this code. And I don't know how the code is comprised, but it's basically like this huge number, like this 12-digit number, and it denotes like the exact like latitude and longitude and how big of a space and da 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 this property is. So when they sell it, they don't say, you know, like 1343 Apple Lane, Atlanta, Georgia 32246 or whatever it is. That's actually Jacksonville zip code, but they don't say the entire address. They just say the parcel number. I did not write these numbers down at all. I wrote down addresses. So I had like no clue what was going on. Like none. So I'm still by myself. Like I'm, you know, still 22 years old with like my entire life savings in this check. They're like rattling off these numbers. And I start getting nervous. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I've come so far. I lived in Seattle at the time. So I'm like, oh, like I'm going to leave here and I'm not going to get a property. And I just raised my hand. Oh my God. Exactly. And I freaking won. I won this property. Like, literally,
I have to clap. You won.
Like,
oh my goodness. Wow.
Like, literally, the most irresponsible. I didn't know the address. I didn't know if it was a house, if it was an empty lot, if it was where it was. I didn't find out that information. I, like, you know, called. I didn't get the deed, the tax deed, until like way later. I called David like, you know, maybe 18 months later because we fell out of contact. And I was like, dude, I just put down my, you know, I just put down $5,000 for this property. I don't know where it is. Like, I need you to do, like, what do I need to do to get this property? Like, what can I do to get this deed? Because when you win, you don't get, you know, you don't get the actual property. You get a tax deed, and then you got to jump through a couple more hoops, and you go from there.
And that all will be something later on that you can train people on, telling them actually what the process is. But this is just kind of the fast forward story. So again, you guys, you can go to her website, AshleyEvans.com, spelled AshleyEvans.com. She will have information on how to contact her to learn more about this tax deed stuff, because we can't cover all this in 45 minutes, but I'm telling you, this is something that you definitely want to jump on. Learn about this situation from Ashley, because firsthand she can tell you how to do it. So, okay, so back to David. You told him, okay, I don't know what to do. I got this deed. What do I do?
So he finally sends it to me. So I bought it in July of 2014. I don't find out the address until about, I would say, September of 2015. No, longer. It was like 2016 when I found out the address. So I bought it. 2015. So I bought it July of 2015, and then I got the address a year later. So in the meantime, people are like, so what did you spend your $5,000 on? And I'm like, like, I don't know.
What did your mom like, say? I want to know what your mother said. What did she say?
So she deserves like a huge shout out. She is a titan of a woman. Like, she, you know how they talk about Black women are superwomen and like Black women superwoman syndrome?
Uh-huh.
That's her. She just, you know, her friends would be like, is Ashley okay? And she would just stand. She would be like, Ashley is a woman and she's on her journey to life. And if this like was a total mistake, she'll never make it again. You know, she'll never money to buy stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. She won't talk to strangers anymore. But she, what eventually ended up happening is me and my mom, like, we started an LLC together. We jumped through all the hoops to get the property. We finally got the property. And then she helped me rehab it. And we did it as a mother-daughter team. Like, we found the general contractor together. We put like $50,000 into it. I would like fight with a contractor, and I had never been a boss before. I had never had to hire people. So my mom would do it. You know what I mean? She would call mm-hmm. and confront them for me because I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
And she really taught me like the whole process, like working with her and financing things and working with, you know, contractors. She really taught me about being a boss and being assertive and, you know,
leadership
confrontation
skills.
Is a part of, she did. She really mm-hmm. did. Like, the real hero in this story is my mom. I could, there's no Ashley without her.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
definitely. She, you know, I had to put down, I think it was like $20,000 down payment for the house. Mm-hmm. And she put down the first down payment, and then I paid the rest. And that's how I ended up with a $20,000 loan. I think the interest rate was 13.5%.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, we'll talk about that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But, yep. So we bought the house for $5,000. We put $50,000 into it. And then I just sold it last year to help pay for school. And we sold it for $150,000.
Oh, okay. So what was the net profit on that property?
Right around $106,000.
Oh, my goodness. Ashley, that is so yeah. wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It was a, you know, a wild ride. It was our first time having tenants. It was my mom's first time and I kind of like running a business together. But it worked out. It really did. It's been a fun journey. An interesting, crazy journey. Like, literally from the day I met David and I was like, I want to be a millionaire, so I'll give you all my money and fly to Atlanta until I got accepted into Yale. And it's been a ridiculous shenanigans filled story, but it's been fun.
Tell me this. Okay, so with the whole real estate situation, and that's only part of the story, tell me three of the greatest lessons that you learned throughout that whole process from start to finish.
You will go against the grain. The number one is go against the grain.
Okay.
If people aren't questioning your sanity or questioning, are you okay? Or are you sure this is the right decision? then that means you're not trying hard enough. You're not thinking big enough.
Mm-hmm.
I would say everything phenomenal that I've done, you know, like that's probably one of the biggest things I've done. That turned out pretty well. But for a while, everyone thought we were crazy. Mm-hmm. Everyone thought we were crazy. I traveled to Zambia and South mm-hmm. Africa and Namibia by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And people called my mom every other day, like, don't you think that's a little irresponsible to be a young woman traveling by yourself like that?
Mm.
All the time. So that is absolutely number one. If, like, society keeps you, society is mediocre. That's what society means, right? Like, there's an average.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an average for a reason, you know?
Well, what I think is, like, with what you're telling me, it sounds like, which, I mean, of course, we go through this because I'm, quote, weird, too. I do things, you know, and people are like, oh, my goodness, why are you doing that? But what happens is society, people we love, people we know, end up projecting their own fears onto us. And
absolutely.
We're supposed to just kind of shrink back and say, oh, yeah. You're right. I shouldn't be traveling by myself. Let me stay in a hole. You know,
yeah.
But like you said, you know, if you aren't having people question you in that way and think that you're like doing something totally outlandish, you need to push a little bit harder.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say success with fear. Like there's this weird relationship between success and fear where you're constantly outside of your comfort zone. You're constantly mm-hmm. wondering like, is this the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't have success without leaving your comfort zone. Because if you don't leave your comfort zone, you're not growing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to operate in this certain level of unknown, of fear invoking unknown in order to reach that next level of success.
I like to say you have to become comfortable in being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's mm-hmm. true. And catchy and witty.
Right.
Be comfortable in being uncomfortable. Yeah.
Right. Because what are you doing if you're not uncomfortable? What are you doing if you're not moving? You become stagnant. And if you're stagnant, what happens? Stagnant water starts to stink. I mean, have you ever left dishes in the sink and like didn't wash them? That is stagnant
maybe.
Water. And it begins to you said, I'll tell you,
maybe.
I have done
I might
that.
Relate.
I have
I relate
that,
more
so.
Than I should.
Right. Like stagnant water, it just starts to stink. And I mean, what does that do? That's not producing any fruit. It's just going bad. It's going rotten. It's becoming nothing. So you definitely don't ever want to do that. So I think you're absolutely right. So what is your number two?
Number two lesson, birds of a feather flock together.
Mm-hmm.
My friend circle, the people who, even if they didn't understand me, they loved me through it, are mm-hmm. still in my life. And mm-hmm. you know, the people who didn't aren't really. You know, family is an exception. Family, I do believe blood is thicker than water.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the people who have been there, who've seen the whole journey, like they are my family.
Mm-hmm.
And they help me grow. They keep me honest. They love me through my flaws. And the people who didn't aren't around anymore. And I believe, like, I am one of the everyone in my circle betters me in a certain way, in a majority of ways, in a lot of ways. So I am never, ever the smartest, the strongest, the best, the most put together, the wisest in my circle.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. And the people that you're around should always cause you to constantly do reflection on yourself. Always. Like always.
Yeah.
Like, because you always want to be doing better. Not that you want to be better than somebody else, but you want to make sure that you are better than the person that you were yesterday. And that could mean spiritually, mentally, physically, financially, whatever. It could mean a whole lot of things. But if I'm looking at this person in front of me that I call my friend, I want to make sure that I'm reflecting on how I'm being. So, yep, that's definitely important. Okay, what is your number three?
Okay, number three is hard. Give me a second. Number three, biggest lesson that I've learned. Know how to pivot. That's probably number three. Know how to pivot. So I would say my life hasn't worked out how I thought it would at all. Not at all.
You're 28. What do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Let's take it all the back. Let's take it all the way back. So I did ROTC. That's how I paid for school.
Mm-hmm.
I did Navy ROTC. Mm-hmm. And I was pre-med. I was pre-med literally the entire time I was in college. I was a biomedical engineer. Mm-hmm. I was pre-med and I was in ROTC. So I was literally working my butt off to become an OBGYN. Working my butt off. And the plan was for the Navy to pay for undergrad and then send me to medical school, and then I would be a Navy doctor. And wow. Then my senior year came along, and I found out that they weren't going to pay for ROTC school or ROTC students to go to medical school. So 10 kids from the academy went to medical school, 0 kids from ROTC did.
Oh,
and
man.
I mean, and at this point, because I had like literally, I was like, oh, I'm going to be a doctor. I never listened in ROTC class because I'm going to be a doctor. So it's like my senior year and they're like, oh, you're going to be a SWO. And I'm like, what's a SWO? And they're like, oh, you're going to drive ships. And I'm like, what's a ship? And they're like, what have you been doing in for the past 4 years? And I had never ever considered that my plan wouldn't come to fruition ever.
Right.
So, I become this SWO, this ship driver who drives these things, right? Like, and then I met you guys, and that kind of feeds into this whole, like, you know, I need something where I can have more autonomy. I need something where I can be more of myself.
Honestly, oh, wait a minute. Hold on. So you actually drove ships, correct? Okay, so to me, when I look at that, the bigger picture of that, a ship is huge. So when you balance the size of a ship and life, life is huge as well. That just tells me that you are prepared for anything.
Aww.
If you can drive a ship, you can drive this life. You can do anything that you need to do, anything that is put in front of you. It's not like you're driving FTD floral truck. No, you drove ships. So that means you are ready for anything that is put in front of you. That is so symbolic. Oh, I'm excited for you.
Thank you. I've never heard that before, ever. I've never thought of it that way. I've never heard that before. Like, I was literally, I always felt like I was just a passenger in life, and I was just along for the ride. Like, I was just bee-booping, you know, just like, shimmying my way through life.
Right.
But I remember, I can't remember if you were in the room or not, but I remember looking at David and telling him, like, I need to be a millionaire by 30 because I never want to work a job for the money and not because I want to again.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of what my driving factor, like, that's kind of how I navigated through life.
Mm-hmm.
So I become a SWO, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I become a SWO, and how this story, how this particular story ends is I met a doula. Met a doula. Mm-hmm. She took me to, this is 4 years after I graduated from college. So this is in 4 years. So 2017. And she took me to my first home birth.
But what is a doula? And for those people who are listening that don't know what a doula is, because I had 3 children and the 4th on the way before I knew what a doula was. So tell us what a doula is.
Let's talk about what a doula is.
Yes.
A doula is God's gift to childbirth. It is usually a woman who mainly focuses on the well-being and the physical and emotional and mental needs of the mother. So a midwife and a doctor when labor is imminent, so when the baby is pretty much, or no, when labor is active, so even before childbirth is imminent, you know, when you're in, you know, 5-6 centimeters, the midwife and OBGYN primary concern is, are you alive? Is baby healthy? So as long as, you know, like mom is not preeclamptic, as long as baby's not, you know, baby's heart is not decelerating, like, cool beans. Their checklist is complete.
Mm-hmm.
But a woman is going through so much more than just breathing. A woman is going through, she's so much more than a blood pulse or a blood pressure and a pulse, right?
Like,
this is one of the most challenging and pivotal and crucial moments of a woman's life. So a doula is there to cater to her through this event. How are you feeling? Do you need water? Are you exhausted? Because you can, you know, it's okay to sleep. You can sleep right now. What do you need? You know, woman at her most vulnerable point, what can I do for you to make this process as tolerable and as bearable as progress? A doula is there for the woman, because sometimes in childbirth that role can go unfilled, and that's a trap.
Wow. Okay, so you got to meet a doula, and what happened after that?
So I have this thing about traveling for strangers. Actually, I just realized that that's a habit I'm going to stop. But she invited me to this home birth. I had met her on a Saturday, and Sunday night she invited me to a home birth. She was like, "Don't, your first birth that you witnessed shouldn't be in a hospital. It should definitely be at a home." So I'm like, "Okay, cool." Literally, like the next day, the next night, she invited me to a home birth. Once again, total stranger, knew this woman for like 24 hours. She's like, "Hey, show up at this address," and I'm like, "Okay." And I was stationed in Jacksonville at the time, and the home birth was like it was like 2 hours from where I lived, and it was a trailer in a field.
Oh my gosh.
And, yes.
It could have been all kind of situations, and you just showed up there, right?
Yes. Yeah. So it kind of reminded me of, what's that movie? The Leatherface movie.
Oh my gosh. Not Deliverance. I don't know. I don't watch
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
You just like roll. It's like this long like road, and you show up, and it's a trailer.
Okay.
And I remember texting my mom and telling her like, "Hey, if you don't hear from me from 12 o'clock, you need to worry." You know what I mean? It was like 7 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that.
Yes.
The sun was starting to set. I'm in the middle of nowhere, so there's no streetlights. And
meeting some stranger that you just met.
Yes. Meeting a stranger in a trailer, you know, with this woman who I've never met. I didn't even know her name at the time. Who's in labor.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is my life. So I, you know, knock on the door. I show up, and it is the woman, first of all, the woman is 9 centimeters.
Oh.
And she is laughing. She's joking around. Her husband's like, "Hey, do you want some pizza?" And I'm like, "I'd love some pizza," person I've known for 4 minutes. Like,
But don't you love that about yourself? Because that has been the most adventurous times when you just jump in there, right?
Now that I think about it, like, though it's those moments, right? So meeting you and David, meeting that doula, it's those moments that have changed my life forever. Like,
they
are the most impactful moments. They have made me who I am.
Yes.
But she had her baby.
Uh-huh.
It was me, the midwife. It was four of us on her birth team. So it was the doula, the midwife, a student midwife, and me. And I remember the student midwife, and it was her first birth too. And we ended up holding each other crying because it was just such a profound moment. Such a beautifully, it was silent. She had her baby in a pool, in the middle of her kitchen. She was a very quiet laborer. So, she, like, she couldn't feel her contractions before. Mm-hmm. But when she finally started to feel them, she got really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband, I'm trying to remember, her husband started crying. And I just remember, like, holding on to this student midwife, like, tears flowing down my face. And then it was that same doula, now that I think about it. So about 3 months after that, that same doula called me. And she was like, I think you're going to be a midwife. Mm. And I was like, oh, maybe. Like, I found Yale had this program. I didn't need prerequisites, so I could get out of the Navy and just go straight to school. But it was Yale, and, you know, I told her the OBGYN story, and she was like, you weren't meant to be an OBGYN. Like, you're going to be a midwife.
Wow.
And, yeah, yeah. And literally the next year, I found out I was getting out of the Navy, and I started my application for Yale. It was, it was exactly 12 months after that.
And I remember when you got accepted. I mean, literally, like, I feel like I'm your Facebook wingman. Like, totally. I remember that. And I was like, man, she is just doing so many things. And I'm just so proud of you. I mean, you just, you are just really, I mean, you are going to be able to look back on your life even 5 years from now. I mean, you're reflecting on this doula situation like it was yesterday, and that is so precious. So, I mean, wow, Ashley, I'm just blown away. like, really, I am so blown away. So tell us about, let's see, tell us about how you paid off this $30,000 in debt. Was that with the real estate? What, how did you do that?
Yeah, so that's another part of my life that I haven't talked about yet.
Okay.
There's this community of people called FIRE, Financial Independence Retire Early. And,
I heard of that. Are you part of that?
Yeah.
You're part of that? Okay.
I'm a groupie. So I like okay. follow all the people, and I run around being starstruck.
Uh-huh.
And I never thought I would be one of those people, you know? Like, to be honest, if I saw, like, you know, Beyonce or Jay-Z, I'd be like, oh, that's cool. But when it comes to, like, FIRE people, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, do you know who you are? Like, I'm your biggest fan. But it was right before I started rehabbing the house in Georgia, and I was researching, you know, being a landlord and doing, you know, getting a house ready to rent out. And I stumbled upon the FIRE movement. And, I ended up going to a conference in Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'll give it a shout out. It's Camp Phi. Camp Phi happens all across the country, and it's basically, you know, people who are trying to save up enough money to be financially independent or not need to work for money anymore. They've saved up enough to where they can work for fun or stop working or basically live life how they want to live it because they don't have to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to this camp, and I'm like really proud of myself. I'm like, you know, yay, I have two houses and I have a job, and, you know, I was investing my 10%, like, I'm doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I had $30,000 in debt. I had an $11,000 car loan. And I had that interest. I had paid it down to $17,000 at this point. But I had $17,000 at a 13.5% interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of card debt. So it was like $30,000 total. And
wow.
Yeah. So I sit down with a couple of the speakers from the event because it's pretty intimate. It's a, you know, it's a small community. Like, everyone's chill. So I'm like, hey, will you look at my finances? And they look at it and they're like, oh my God. Like, I mean, they go in complete, like ring the bell, like fire. Like, this is an emergency. Like, they tear me to shreds. They're like, this is not okay. Like, this is not okay.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. They freak out. But that's the thing. Like, step number one of like the FIRE community is don't have debt, because when your money isn't going to other people, it, more of it goes to you, and if more of it goes to you, more of it can go into like investment accounts. So like, you know, number one rule of FIRE Club is don't have debt.
Okay.
So he actually tells me to, and a lot of people say don't do this, but I did it and I don't regret it at all. He was like, borrow against your 401k and pay off that $17,000, like pay off that 13.5% interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and that it dropped my interest rate from 13.5% to 2.5%, and the payments went from 735 to about 230.
Whoa, that's a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really helpful. That was huge. And the way that I like justified having such a high interest rate is that I didn't have a mortgage on the house in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So I treated that loan as if it was the mortgage. Like it was a loan for rehabbing that house. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, you know, I don't have a mortgage, so this is kind of like my mortgage. So when I decided to get out of the military and I applied to Yale, I was like, well, I got to pay everything else off. So I sold my car and I got a roommate, and it took me about, so I think at that point, so that was August of 2018. After I sold the car, I think I owed about $16,000, and it took me about 6 months to pay off that $16,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I was debt-free by February of 2019.
Wow. Okay. So then how did you celebrate the debt-free scream? Did you go on a trip? What did you do?
I will tell you what I did. I had a really bad day at work, and I got plastered with tacos and margaritas.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yeah. I remember making a post about it, like, I'm debt-free. I'm going to save all my money. And then like 2 minutes later, I was like, I just spent like $60 on 3 tacos, like 2 shots of whiskey and 2 margaritas by myself. Like,
and I deserve it.
And I do not feel bad about it.
Exactly.
Ask me if I feel bad.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's congratulations. Again, you guys, listen to me. She is 28 years old. Some of you guys are 48 years old and haven't even done half of this, but that's no comparison because it's not too late. It's not too late. That's why we're having this show right now with Ashley, so that you can be inspired to do more in your life. Are you sitting behind a desk? Are you like working for somebody, working for the man, and you have all these great ideas that you would like to do and put together? It's never too late to start. Never too late to start. That's why you need to make sure that you go to her website, which again is ashleyevans.com, and you spell Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H, evans.com. But we're going to go to a commercial, you guys, right now. Thank you again for listening to Ms. Cece, the Real Infopreneur, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay. Yeah, but on my way.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
This call is being recorded.
All right, everybody, we're back. Thank you so much. This show is being brought to you by BlackTalkMediaNetwork.com, BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, where this is new media for the new millennium. Tune in 24/7 to the newest stories, important stories to you. It's Real Talk and Black Talk. We are speaking right now with Ashley Evans on all of her expertise at her tender age of 28. I mean, she's gone through so many things in her life, from real estate, paying off debt. She's become a doula. She's gotten accepted into Yale University. So the next thing we're going to talk about is her travel. She's gone to 11 countries. Is that right? 11 countries, Ashley?
Yeah, something like that. Okay. Part. I think it's like 12 officially. But...
Okay. Well, she's been to 12 countries in what is the time frame here we're talking?
I think 6 months, September to February.
Oh my gosh. September to February. She has gone to 12 countries. So tell us what you plan on doing with travel. Are you going to funnel this into a business, or are you just going to keep traveling?
I think I'm going to. So now we're kind of getting into my next projects, and I'm still learning how to advertise myself and talk about it. Mm-hmm. So this is new frontier for me. Mm-hmm. But I'm starting to learn and realize how many people are afraid to solo travel, and how many people like plan to go on a trip and then they don't go because all of their friends back out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's insane. Like, you are your perfect travel partner because, mm-hmm. you know, you can do whatever you want. So there's no one who's ever going to be mad at you for, getting up too late or getting up too early or going to bed too, you know what I mean? You are your perfect travel partner. So I'm mm-hmm. getting into solo traveling consulting. So how to prepare for a solo trip. How do you, and these, you know, these lessons are universal. Of course, like if they apply to you traveling solo, they apply to you traveling in a group. But how to get over those typical hangups that keep people from going on a solo, you know, being afraid of security. Where do I stay if I'm like a single female? What do I do about language barriers? How do you afford it? Those kind of questions.
Well, let me also add to it, you know, because we are all infiltrated by media. Like right now, the biggest thing is this coronavirus or whatever, although it's been around forever. It's been on the back of Clorox wipes forever. It's been here. But now it's an epidemic and it's infiltrating the world right now. So I said all that to say, we look at media, we look at the information that has been given to us, and then we kind of put a cork in it. We stop our plans because of what the media says. Now, we know that, you know, last year, we saw everybody dying when they went to the Dominican Republic or they went to Puerto Rico or they went to the Bahamas. We saw Black people dying and their family couldn't find them and all this other stuff. So how do we actually confront that fear that has been fed to us by the media and still travel? How do we do that?
So, you know, because I work with, you know, women who are my age or younger than me, or, you know, women who are traveling solo, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to go, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What I'll tell you to do is tell me where you want to go. Where can I get you to? So the place, what's happening is a lot of people base their travel on Instagram and like Facebook posts. And if mm-hmm. enough people post pictures from those countries, that's where they want to go next. And so mm-hmm. Very common. This happens all the time. They'll be like, well, I want to go to Bali, but it's so far and, you know, I'm 22 and I don't know where to stay. So what I'll say to do is go to state.gov. And every single country has an official, you know, Department of the State website that kind of says like, yay or nay, whether we recommend traveling there or not. So if you're like hyper nervous about, you know, going to a country, what I'll say is get on Instagram and see where all the other kids your age are going. Mm-hmm. 50 million college girls are going, it's probably safe for you to go. I promise. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're like me and, you know, you want to see more, there's more to the world than, you know, beautiful Instagram pictures and, you know, influencers. If you want to see more of the actual world, here's what I do. I Google the touristy cities in a country. So Namibia. I did not plan on going to Namibia at all. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember how I chose Namibia. I think I saw it on someone's profile picture, and I was like, hey, I like your picture, where is that? And they were like, oh, it's Namibia. And I was like, well, I was at Zambia at the time, so I was like, oh, I'm going to Namibia next. So what I did is I Googled the cities that tourists go to in Namibia, and it's a city called Swakopmund and Windhoek.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I go to an area that I don't know, so Zambia, Namibia, Tanzania, South Africa, I will stay at like a name brand hotel for 2 to 3 days,
mm-hmm.
or like 2 nights until I get the lay of the land and the feel for the area. And then I'll switch to an Airbnb, because paying for like a name brand hotel in a foreign country, a lot of times they run around 150 to 200 per night.
Mm-hmm.
And with those same countries, I can find an Airbnb for $25 to $50 per night.
That's a huge difference.
That's quite a difference. And honestly, when you're talking about, you know, solo traveling, that's a difference between 3 to 4 nights in a country to 10 days in a country, 2 weeks mm-hmm. in a country.
Mm-hmm.
So I always stay in like a Marriott, and then I'll talk to the people in the, or, you know, whatever the hotel is. I'll talk to the front desk and be like, okay, where can I walk to? What can I do? Where can I eat at night? I'm a snacker. I eat mm-hmm. a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what do I do when, you know, I'm hungry at night? And they'll tell you, they'll be honest, like, yo, you don't need to stay here. Like, there's another hotel 3 blocks away, go move there instead. And I'll be like, great, awesome, no problem. And I'll stay there instead. And then I'll do the same thing. What do I need to see? What do I need to do? Where do I need to not go? And people are, especially Africa, people in Africa want you to feel like you're at home. Like, Africa is very accommodating. It's very like, it's, especially for Black people, it's a very loving country. Everywhere I've been has made me feel just very, very loved. So they'll, you know, they'll tell you, and then they'll call and be like, hey, we know you're traveling alone. I just wanted to make sure you got back okay.
Wow.
Yes, all the time. Some of my strongest friendships that I've made from while traveling, someone from Tanzania, FaceTimed me today and was just like, hey, what are you doing? Like, just wanted to see what you were doing. That's Africa. That's been my experience in almost every African country, with the exception of one.
What was that, South Africa?
It was, I didn't stay in South Africa long. When I went to South Africa, you talk about fear. When I went to South Africa was right when that girl, there was a girl, and she died in a pretty brutal way. I think, yes, it was Cape Town. She was a University of Cape Town student, and she was like raped, and then she was brutally murdered. And it set off like this chain reaction in Cape Town, where people were protesting femicide, because Cape Town actually has like one of the highest female murder rates in the world. I didn't stay very long. I absolutely am going to go back, but because I was just starting my travel journey, that I didn't want to stay there very long. So I stayed there for like a couple of nights in Johannesburg, and then I went to straight to Zambia and stayed there for like 10 days.
Okay. Wow. Well, that was eye-opening, I bet, all that going on. But still you rise. So you're still doing it. That's wonderful. So where is your next trip?
I'll be honest. I got back from Italy like a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very ready to settle down. Like, I'm very ready to get my furniture out of storage and like sit on a couch and watch Netflix and fall asleep with like a cup of tea. Like, mm-hmm. I want stability.
Yes.
So my next trip will be to New Haven, Connecticut, and I will be finding a place to live and getting ready to start school.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited for you, and I definitely appreciate you for taking the time out of your busy, busy schedule to talk to me and my listening audience. And I'm looking forward to everything that you have to come. I'm looking forward to, you know, more of the stories of what you're into. I'm looking forward to your website being birthed. I'm looking forward to see you driving the ship of your life. I mean, just, I'm just really, like I said, I'm watching you from afar and I'm just like so amazed and proud of you. Now, is there anything else that you want to talk to our listening audience about before we go?
I think you covered, you just made me sound like so cool.
You are super cool.
That's it. You know, I'm on Instagram, Ashley Evans. I think it's Ashley Evans, the REI, the real estate investor. I'm on, just find me at my website and, you know, make the world your oyster. Never be afraid to travel to your, you know, dream destination. And I'm willing to help people make that happen.
That's absolutely fantastic. Well, we definitely want to thank you again. People, if you'd like to reach out to her, you can look up her website, AshleyEvans.com, A-S-H-L-E-Y. I'm sorry. No, that it's not Y. I just did it off the top of my head. No, A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H, Evans.com, AshleyEvans.com. Let me spell it for you again. A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H, AshleyEvans.com. So it's not like that regular Ashley that I just slipped up and spelled. It's Ashley with L-E-I-G-H. Okay, AshleyEvans.com. So look her up. Look her up and find out what you need to find out about moving forward, okay? Because it's important. Like, we're sitting here, we're listening to all these news stories, we're feeling infiltrated by bad news, but you have the ability to make it good news, make your life great. And this has been Miss Cece, the Real Infopreneur, and we definitely will be talking to you again soon. All right.